Welcome to the fresh and vibrant airwaves of the Pride and Promotion Podcast. Strap in and turn up the volume because you've landed on the podcast that's setting the bar for the most dynamic and inclusive marketing conversations. Join your host, Joseph Federico, as he prepares to dive into the world of marketing with an inclusive twist where we spotlight the LGBT community and celebrate the power of diversity. Get ready to be motivated as we bring in some of the most influential LGBT entrepreneurs and marketing trailblazers who are reshaping the...
Hi, everybody. Joe Federico here, your host of the Pride and Promotion Podcast. Thank you for joining us today. I have a very special guest with us, Christian Baines. He is an author, a six-time novelist, including Gay Paranormal Series, right up my alley, right? I also write horror, guys. The Arcadia Trust, and My Cat's Guide to Online Dating, and many others. And he's joining us from none other than Toronto. So, Christian Baines, thanks for joining us, and please give everybody an introduction.
Pleasure to be here, Joseph. Thanks very much for having me.
So the floor is yours, my friend.
Okay. Introduction, I guess. Well, I'm, as you've said, I'm an author. I tend to work within the wheelhouse of gay paranormal, gay horror, fantasy, darker thrillers, occasionally horror comedy, as I veered into with Cat's Guide. And I don't know. I like to sort of hop around genres and keep things queer and give queer characters access to genres that we might not otherwise get in a lot of mainstream work.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm an author myself. I got my start in the business originally back in publishing in 2005 in Manhattan. It was a whole different world back then. I thought I was going to work in publishing forever. But as you probably know, which we'll get into in a few moments, you have to pivot, right? So tell us about yourself, of course, which we know more about yourself, but how did you wind up in the lavish business of becoming an author?
I think I wanted to write and tell stories as long as I can remember. I started sort of just in my teens doing short science fiction stories and Star Trek fanfic and that sort of thing. And I started writing my first, I guess, serious novel about in my early 20s, and then one that actually wound up published about 5 years after that. And so it's not really been so much of a pivot for me. It's kind of had been something I've had on my radar and on my plans for as long as I can remember. It's just fortunately I've been in a position where I've been well supported and had a good response to what I've been doing, so I've been able to continue with it.
So tell us about your first novel in your 20s. What was that about, and how did you create these characters in that first book?
I'll talk about the one that wound up published. So that was The Beast Without, and that started out actually as an erotic vampire story.
Oh.
And I thought, this is just going to be one scene. I just as kind of an exercise. I'd never really written paranormal. I'd never really, I had a fascination with horror, but I wasn't really, and I read like a fair bit of paranormal romance and urban fantasy, but I'd not really branched into writing it as a possibility. And I just found I really liked these characters, and particularly the main character. He was kind of snarky. And I felt like that character had a lot of room to grow. I mean, we love to get on board with snark as long as we don't live there permanently.
Sure.
So he's kind of a fun character to work with from that perspective. And now the fourth book in that series is about to release this spring. It'll be out in either May or June.
Amazing.
That's kind of played out pretty well for me. And it's a little different. It's a paranormal series set in Sydney, Australia, which is probably not the first city you think of when it comes to vampires and werewolves and what have you. And there's different terminology for all the different creatures and their own mythology and their own way of coming into being and how they interact with the world. I think the biggest difference, though, is that I wanted to tell it all from the vampire perspective.
Okay.
And it's not like a century-spanning epic like the Vampire Chronicles, but it's sort of it does away with that human equation in the that's kind of a fixture in a lot of paranormal romance and urban fantasy. I kind of want to, well, what if we did away with that trope?
Okay.
Like if there's a if there's a love triangle to be had here, let's not have a human involved. Where's okay. Where's that going to
so
take us?
It's all based on the creatures and their lives and
yeah,
their experiences.
It's all about the creatures. We spend the whole time behind the curtain.
Okay. So what drew you to the horror genre, the paranormal romance? I myself have dabbled and am continuing to write in that genre, not only with podcasting, but also everything else in my life. But I know that queer men essentially are attracted to horror. So what was it about horror many years ago that had attracted you to the genre? And how do you feel that the queer culture itself has evolved since then?
I mean, my initial attraction to horror was by virtue of the fact that I wasn't allowed to watch it or read it. So that made it irresistible as far as I was concerned, as I started to reach kind of an age of agency and making my own decisions and such. But one thing I was allowed to engage with and engage with in a big way was Gothic horror and Victorian and sort of very traditional sort of ghost stories. So they've been kind of a very big influence on how I've kind of reconnected up with the genre as an adult, I guess. It's, as you say, I think as queer people, we're quite drawn to horror because it's a place and a reality where things that kind of subvert expectations and subvert ideas of what safety is and what, normality is can be celebrated. And like, like queerness. So, you know, you grew up sort of, certainly when I was growing up being bombarded with this idea of nuclear family and as kind of this source of safety and religion is this source of safety, horror kind of just flips the whole table on that. What would Jesus do indeed? And yeah, I kind of appreciated it for that. And I don't know, I've kind of just sort of absorbed as much as I can. And I wouldn't say that I want to stay in that genre all the time. I like borrowing elements from various genres. I really enjoy sort of surreal kind of stories, which is an interesting thing to try and do in written work. But yeah, no, horror has been a big and very consistent influence and a very liberating one for me.
That resonates with me so well, number one. Number two, I know it's going to resonate with a lot of our people listening, you know, in our audience, both visually and, you know, through sound. So why vampires? Because I'm writing a vampire romance myself. Now I'm really curious as to what drew you to vampires originally with your first works.
Oh, I mean, it's the sex appeal. Like I said, I started this with I started this with writing a short erotic story between a vampire and his trade for the night. So I don't know though. But beyond that, I mean, what sustains that beyond an erotic story to like a get to a fourth book with it? I think it is partly it's the immortality. There is a lot of room to grow with those kind of characters. Mm-hmm. There's the scope for the characters to be deeply flawed and very corruptible with the sheer power and longevity that they have.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, they're kind of evergreen popular characters. With this series, I've kind of ridden the wave of watching the Twilight fad rise and fall.
Yeah.
As a lot of us who kind of inhabit this genre have, because I don't write quickly. I try not to concern myself with what's kind of topical or fashionable.
Sure.
I just try and get the best story out I can at the time I can get it done. So yeah,
I can speak about this for hours, you know, Christian, first of all. Second of all, getting into the pride aspect of the Pride and Promotion podcast is why we're here, right? Talk about pride, what that means to you and the audience, but also the promotion aspects will come in a few minutes. So regarding writing in the horror genre, the paranormal romance, has that assisted you in becoming more prideful throughout the years, not only in your personal life, but also through your writing?
Absolutely. I think it's such an interesting parallel, I think, between queerness and horror. For those of us who, at least those of us who engage with horror, whether you like sort of the more extreme violent kind or the more psychological kind or the more classic or fantastical kind, or elements, that subvert patriarchy like witchcraft and things like that, there are so many elements within horror that are kind of emancipating with queerness. And for me, it was a very real parallel as I was discovering queerness and entering my late teens. I was not very confident. I was not meeting a lot of people, but I did have the confidence and I did have the freedom to explore horror as a genre. So that was, in a lot of ways, my coming out. It was through horror movies and it was through horror stories. So yeah, I think for me, they're very tangibly and very quite irrevocably intertwined in that way.
Horror can be so evoking, again, especially I think as queer men or queer people. And especially vampires can be so damn sexy, right? But there's so many elements to that. They have to hide in the shadows and they have to drink blood or whatever, to survive, which I think, as you had said, have immense parallels to the queer community, especially queer men, who may not have been able to watch horror or, read horror growing up and still being in the closet, at least for myself. So that's a very interesting, connection is I feel that we as gay men really are attracted to the horror genre, and I think we always will be, to be perfectly honest.
And was that, I think if you like I grew up associating gay sex with danger, as I
Same
think
here.
a lot of people of my generation did.
Yep.
And it wasn't just the risk of HIV infection or anything like
Sure.
that. It was this whole idea of if you went into this lifestyle, that this would be an inherently dangerous situation for you and that you would never be happy. So the parallels there with regards to the possibility of a sexual engagement with monsters, is very obvious and very real. And in the case of my own stories, when you take the humans out, well, what happens when you have the monsters of different species hooking up with each other? There's
Interesting.
no possible way that can go wrong, right?
Not at
But
all. Not at all.
again, there's so many possibilities there, and there is a beauty there. It's not for everybody, obviously. If it was for everybody, we probably would not be talking about it. But there's a certain beauty in a kind, an aesthetic beauty in certain kinds of violence and certain kinds of horror. Within the right context.
And also different
And I
tastes,
think
right?
I'm right.
What's safe and what's not safe? I mean, it's safer to read than to act, but also we need, that's why your works are so important, because we need that representation in the community at the same time.
Well, exactly. I mean, they open up avenues that we may not be able to or want to explore in our real lives, and or we may see ourselves, subversive aspects of ourselves through these characters or these actions. So, I mean,
Exactly.
we all of us chart our own queer chart our own queer journey and our own understanding of what pride is. And for some, that's kind of dark and twisted, and some want to keep us. They think the world is horrible enough, and they want to keep as far away from the fictional rendering of it as possible, and that's fine. But I definitely
Exactly.
went in the other direction, and sort of a those sides of myself I refer to as the darkling and the queerdo now,
Okay,
which is
yeah.
what I call my readers as well if they visit my site and read my blog or anything.
I've been seeing you on social media, I know.
And I think it's kind of apt because I think those are things that if they are your authentic self, definitely need to be embraced.
But also there's, at least in my opinion, there's beauty in that dark and twisted as well. At least, again, in my opinion. So
Yeah,
let's
absolutely.
turn the table quickly, on A Cat's Guide. I've been doing my homework, my due diligence. Your tagline online and your website, as well as your links that you had sent us, were "A hookup gone bad can be perter." So how did you come up with that? And tell us more about A Cat's Guide and what the origin of that story is.
Okay, well, before we go any further, I would like you to meet the protagonist, well, the star of A Cat's Guide. This is Grace Jones.
Hey, Grace. We have a
She's not
touchy
very
ad.
talkative, but she sees everything.
Okay.
So she sees and hears everything.
Love the
So
name, by the way.
thank you. And the name makes a lot more sense as the book continues. But yes, the tagline, "A hookup gone wrong can be murder." My Cat's Guide to Online Dating is a gay horror sex comedy told in six hookups. And I took this idea of a closeted young man coming out of a bad relationship, decides to get over that by embracing his inner, embracing a certain degree of healthy sort of promiscuity. And he the first hookup goes horribly wrong. And I just kind of played from there. It's absurd. Each one of the hookups is completely and utterly different, and each one teaches him a little bit more about what he needs in a relationship, what he's maybe going forward. The character's also 21, so he's not going to be anywhere near
He's a
figured out
baby.
by the end of the book. But yeah, he doesn't know anything, and that was tremendously freeing as well. Because he's sort of, as he comes out of this fundamentalist Christian upbringing, it kind of hits the reset button. His parents are out of the picture for the duration of the book. And then he has his companion and only ally in this situation, Grace Jones, who is a cat that has worked out how to text. She has the dead man's phone and very specific instructions that she wants obeyed in order to help him with this central problem.
I love that.
So yeah, it's a concept I had a lot of fun with. It's the closest I've done to almost a short story collection, since each of the hookups is kind of a self-contained story into this overarching problem. But it's definitely the weirdest book I've ever written, but it's probably been the most fun as well.
So, have you woven any of your personal experiences, I'm assuming, because I know I do with my works, into that work in particular? Any
Absolutely.
details you would like to share with us, please do.
I don't want to go into too many details. Let's just say the more horrific elements are made up.
Fair enough.
But the more horrific and violent elements are made up. But some of the hookups that he goes on, where he's sort of like, one is with the guy who's very insecure and very inexperienced with sex. One is with a guy who is a little bit older, and someone who the main character can sort of see, oh, you're someone I can sort of almost see myself becoming in 10 years' time, or
Absolutely.
who I would like to see myself as in 10 years' time. So some of those are drawn from reality and people I've met, or acquaintances over the years and things like that. And for such a fantastic kind of absurd story to work, you need something grounded in the middle of it, I think. And even with the vampire series, it's the same. A lot of those stories are really about sort of exploring what young gay single life is in a big city. At least if you're independently wealthy, which is increasingly unreachable for young gay single men, but we won't get into that.
Or we
But
can. We're fine.
oh,
Whole
no, it's quite okay. That's a whole other podcast, and it's going to make me
podcast.
very mad. But yeah, no, there's elements of my own experience in a lot of my in all of my work. The Puppet Boy is a kind of a psych thriller set in a high school, kind of a bit of a Euphoria vibe. But that when I was writing that book, I was in the process of actually moving to Canada, and I aired some of my grievances and issues I was having with, or frustrations, I guess, I was having with Australia politically and such through that book. So yeah, I just kind of explore what is occurring to me at the time, and but there's aspects of myself and all my main characters and all my stories.
And it's amazing what the mind can also put together, or, you know, try to project once you're writing as a creative, at least also for myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So is your main character of Cat's Guide prideful, and why?
That's a really good question. His name is Zach, and he is a person who has been denied pride his whole life. I don't just mean in the queer sense, although his sexuality is certainly part of that, but he's had it beaten into him his entire life that he is a sinner, that he is, not good enough, that he can only be saved through this dogma.
Yeah.
He was overweight, so he emerges into the queer world, and suddenly he's got all that shame to deal with, through which he's unironically told to have pride. He spends almost a year in a relationship with someone who is not particularly good for him, and that ends. So ultimately, as he hooks up with these various guys, he has already come a long way in terms of finding his own pride and finding his own confidence in who he is. Mm-hmm. And his exploration of horror movies has been a part of that, because another thing he was obviously denied, that he could explore safely. And yeah, so I think he definitely, by the end of the book, he is definitely much more prideful. He has a long way to go, but that's really the central thrust of the book, is him discovering what that pride could look like, and how that pride is accessible to him.
His hero's journey, essentially. That's amazing.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
And how about that's what, Grace? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that's what Grace Jones, through her twisted machinations, wants to bring out in him. Because, I mean, you look at, well, why call the cat Grace Jones? Well, when I think in terms of a dangerous feline goddess, you know, that has the power to connect with someone's pride and awaken something in someone. Grace Jones is a pretty good match to that. So
that's actually my follow-up question. Is Grace Jones an ally? Yes or no?
The cat?
The cat. Yes, the cat.
Oh, yes. Grace Jones is an ally. Grace Jones has her own agenda, her own way of allyship.
So everybody, please definitely check out more of this, A Cat's Guide, because we need to hear more about this on the next podcast. Switching gears we went from pride and now we're going to promotion. What's your practice when it comes to press and social media regarding your books? What's the ultimate campaign for you to run to get the word out about your works?
I run a newsletter. I try and keep my blog on my site updated fairly well. I also like to feature other writers on my site and cross promote as much as possible. I think, honestly, particularly in a small community, which, you know, such as queer writers, the more you can cross promote and build community and build those relationships and network, the easier time you're going to have. Partly because they just most of the time wind up being really good friendships. And it gives you the motivation you need to keep going. When I have a new book out, I hit up my list of reviewers as early as I possibly can. My list of past podcasts I've done, or sites, review sites, and such. So I just keep a running list of who has kind of engaged with your books in the past and would be interested in doing so again. And kind of keep that momentum going as to building on what you've been able to establish. You will lose people. Either people leave that space, or some, for whatever reason, may just decide they don't like you anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about a bad review. I've had reviewers turn around and suddenly go very kind of nasty on occasion.
Interesting.
Not many, thankfully. It happens rarely, but it does happen. We're all human.
It does happen, unfortunately, so, yes.
Yeah, but social media, I find social media a little bit of an unreliable beast. I still hit Facebook, Twitter. Yeah, sorry, Elon, I'm gonna dead name it as long as you're dead name your child. I don't tend to use LinkedIn for it, but Blue Sky, any channels I can. I tend to promote my new books on. The reliability of that, I don't know. It's hard to tell exactly what your audience gets to see. Just because the algorithms and rules are constantly changing. I also use a couple of promotional sites such as BookFunnel and BookBub and things like that. So actually right now it's my first time ever experimenting with Kindle Unlimited. The Beast Without is actually on Kindle Unlimited. It's the only one of my books that is. But yeah, if people want to come check it out for free, or your monthly contribution to of your soul to Jeff Bezos, now's a good time to do that. So, but I think it's important to just keep experimenting. Keep the rules are constantly changing, and that the marketplace is constantly changing. So keep experimenting, keep trying different things, and just see what sticks.
What is your favorite social media platform that you feel that is the most reliable in getting the word out about your works?
I find Instagram. Instagram's the
Instagram.
most, yeah.
And why is that? Hit me.
The fact that it's intensely visual, it only asks people to engage for a few seconds. And that's enough. You could hit them with your cover art. You can massively increase the presence of your book in a way that Facebook and Twitter can't match. With that said,
Exactly.
of course, you can't really add a whole lot of links. You can't really add a whole lot of content to it. So you really need a strong sort of supporting system from those initial posts. But yeah, if we're talking about popular social media platforms, I'd say Instagram. And of course, Goodreads is a necessary evil.
True.
Your Goodreads reviews mean everything.
Absolutely. So, to the first time queer authors out there listening, give them some advice on how to get started and how to best promote themselves, with your years of writing experience behind you.
First bit of advice I'd give is to write the best damn book you can.
What's
Honestly,
that?
nothing else you do, not whether you go traditionally published or self-published or have the best social media campaign or book talk or whatever you end up doing, nothing you do will matter if the book isn't good. So make sure you've got absolutely the best book. Make sure it's a book you love, because you're going to be talking about that book for a long time. And particularly if you're traditionally published, that book is going to go away and you're not going to see it for 2 years, and then you suddenly have to talk to everyone about it. So make sure it's one that you believe in. Don't tie yourself in knots worrying about MM romance world versus gay fiction world versus whatever. It's far better
Whatever.
to get an idea exactly what to get an idea what different publishers do. And pay attention to, okay, what channels are they using? Whether you are through them or not, understand where your book is going to sit in relation to other authors. Seek those authors out. Reach out to them. Tell them how much you enjoy their books. Review their books, and get on their radar that way. Like we're all, none of us have huge egos. We're not bringing in 7 figures a month with our books.
No, we're
Darn, I
not.
wish. But so we want everyone to succeed, and the more our network grows and the more interest there is in queer literature, the better. So definitely cultivate those friendships and accept the fact that you're going to have to do 3 or 4 books before anyone really knows your name in the marketplace. So it's a lot of grind and a lot of slog. Don't beat yourself up if you're not churning out a book every 3 months, even though that seems to be standard in romance world.
Oh, that's a
It's not
lot
true for
of
yeah, it's not true for every author. But definitely do the conventions. Keep your social media active. Sorry, you asked for one thing, and I'm going on a whole
I want the whole
screen with
shebang.
30 seconds of,
Hit
okay, all
us.
right. Just no, just understand that like that that climb is going to take time, and in the meantime, enjoy the process of it. Enjoy the conventions. Enjoy the meet. Enjoy the people you'll meet. Enjoy the books that you'll read and what you learn from that. And yeah, because ultimately, if you're not enjoying it, don't do it.
You
This
have to
is
enjoy
this
the
is.
journey. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If you're not enjoying the journey, don't do it, because this is way too much hard work to slog through in something you're not enjoying.
How long would it typically take you to write a manuscript start to finish before getting published?
Oh God, me it usually takes about a year.
About a year. Okay.
Yeah. Usually about a year for each manuscript that I do.
Do you work on it on and off? Is it a start off as a passion project? I mean, for me it does, or at least my first, book in my series did. What is that process? Is it like writing a page a day? Is it working on the November nano, writing month? What is that process on actually getting this damn thing done that you're excited about? You have this idea, you're creative, it's sexy, and then you're like, if you hit a slump, then what happens? What's that process like for you?
I'd say I developed an appreciation for that bit of wisdom that the idea dies as soon as you write it down.
True.
It's interesting you asked me this question right now, because for the first time in my life, I'm working to a sort of a NaNoWriMo-esque work schedule. I have a prequel actually to the Beast Without and the Arcadia Trust series
Okay.
that is novella length. So it's only half my usual length, but I'm trying to get that done with the first draft by the end of this month. And I've never worked to that kind of deadline in my life before, so that's been an interesting experience. Usually I'm just trying to, I don't know, one, it sounds cliche, but one word in front of the next. And then I tend to go back and edit as I go as well, which tends to
Yep.
make the editing process a lot faster.
Yeah.
I tend to enjoy editing more than that, writing that initial first draft. And when I get to the point where I can read my own work back and forget that it's mine, forget that I wrote it, that's when it's ready and it's good to go.
For me, it took about the third book in the series in which I'm currently working, to come to that conclusion where I reread it, I edit it as I'm, and I actually write things down on paper and pen. I don't, I don't type it out until the final process. I don't know what your process is in that sense. Is that more in line to also what you do? I mean, you actually write it out first, or do you type it out
I
from
usually
the
type. I'd say 97% I'd type it out, but occasionally
get-go?
when I'm stuck, it does help me to sit there and write in
Sure.
just write longhand.
But I love what you had said, one word in front of the other, because it can be a grueling process. It can be a very grueling
Absolutely.
process from start to finish.
And you can
One
sit there and
last
write a
question.
page of,
Oh,
sorry.
sorry, go ahead.
No, you can sit there and write a page of absolute nonsense that you know you're going to wind up deleting, but if it gets you in that space where you can keep going, it wasn't a waste of time.
Exactly. But you can also come back to that. It may, spark another offshoot or another prequel or a sequel. Again, at least in my opinion.
Always. Possibilities are limitless.
So one more question for you, just quick draw. Give me your favorite queer author specifically and why that inspired you with your writing. Hardball.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest influence from queer authors, probably Clive Barker.
Okay, and why?
Just the sheer imagination in his works, and the fact that he is so curious and so intensely determined to find the beauty in whether it's the macabre or just the fantastical or anything that is uncanny and outside of our world. I really like that. I mean, to me, it speaks to curiosity. It's the best, I think that's the best quality any sort of artist can have. No matter what sort of level you're working at, if you can be curious about as much as possible, read and absorb as much as possible. So yeah, I'd say Clive Barker was a huge influence. Others, Poppy Z. Bright was an influence on me when I was starting, very young. James Robert Baker, who was a had several hits in the 90s, kind of subversive, kind of punk rock. Really enjoyed his books. So yeah, there's a few there.
So a lot of inspiration that led you to this right now, here and now.
Lots to draw on. So borrow from everyone and bring your own perspective.
Utilize your resources.
Absolutely.
Everybody starting out. Well, Christian, thank you so much for joining. I would like to give you the platform one more time to please promote yourselves. How do we find you on all the social webs and your website, and how can we get your books?
Okay, well, you can find me at my website, which is simply christianbaines.com. You can also find me on Goodreads. I have my Facebook account, which is just facebook.com/christianbainesauthor, or Twitter and Instagram, Christian Baines, but spelled X-T-I-A-N, Baines. So yeah, all of my books are through all of the usual corporate overlords, or they're all available through Ingram as well. So if you have a particular favorite indie store you'd like to get a paperback through, they should be able to do so.
Amazing. Christian, thank you so, so much for joining. I look forward to reading more of your works in the future. Best of luck. And everybody, thank you for joining another episode of the Pride and Promotion Podcast. Stay prideful, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care.
And just like that, we're putting the finishing touches on another fabulous episode of the Pride and Promotion Podcast. If today's conversation struck a chord, why not sing our praises with a quick rating and review on your podcast platform of choice? Your support is the spotlight that helps us shine and bring more folks into our ever-expanding audience. And don't forget to hit subscribe. Let's get social too. Follow us online for all the extra goodies, sneak peeks, and continued dialogue about marketing with pride and purpose. Tune in next time as we unfurl more colorful stories, champion the cause of inclusivity, and learn more from the creme de la creme of the industry. Until our paths cross again, keep pushing boundaries, stay true to yourself, and infuse every project with pride.